Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Another amazing show planned that I think will impact all of us in a big way. I'm really excited for our guest today. You've seen the announcement. We've got Jay Massey here with a new book coming out. And this is one that's been much anticipated. I know the pain it takes to write a book, and you're in it, the trenches for a year, it feels like, or more. And I've been getting updates from Jay, but this is the month, Cashflow Diary, 10 Steps to Creating Wealth in Any Economy. So we're going to have him on here at close to the bottom of the hour, a good friend, an incredible life story, and wait till you hear it. You'll be blown away. So we're excited about that, and boy, tax season. Is it over yet? I don't even know what time I got to bed last night. It's been very long. I know many of you have probably had a few late nights getting your information into the accountant. So, but we'll just have maybe a little break from all that today. And thank you for tuning in. So this is a show. Many of you new listeners out there, maybe checking this out for the first time. Thanks for being here. This is a show about building wealth, saving taxes, trying to live the American dream, find a little more financial freedom, hopefully, in our lives to do what we enjoy doing. So it's a battle for all of us every day. But hopefully here you'll get some tips there that will make it a little more possible. And if you had a chance, you've maybe had a chance to look at the newsletter that just came out this morning. The newsletter has several great blog articles on it. Matt Sorensen just got back from Washington, D.C. last week speaking for RITA, the Retirement Industry Trade Association, on his new book and self-directed IRAs and LLCs and everything about it, and he's just continuing to be a national expert on that IRA topic. And he wrote an article today on crowdfunding and self-directed IRAs, what every investor, portal, and offering company should know. Great article, and if you're trying to raise capital or you're going to throw a few bucks into someone's pot for them to start their business, you're going to want to read that. It's a great article. And then, of course, I've got my March Madness tax strategy article, a lot of fun, and giving you a sleeper strategy for maybe your bracketology. But, of course, that's in a way, it's a week old or so because you've already filled out your brackets. But it's fun. It relates a little bit to all this March Madness going on with the college basketball. It's kind of fun. And the main theme there is filing an extension. Could be one of your best moves. Got tax deadlines in a couple weeks, but that's okay. Extensions are fine. Gives you some time to breathe. So read that article if you're interested. A few others in there. Also a little section on how many rentals to put in an LLC or how many can I or should I. A video on what's an IRA LLC. So just power pack there. So folks, please get in, check it out. And if you haven't subscribed to the newsletter or haven't received it before, please head to any of our law or accounting websites or my personal site. Probably the easiest is markjkohler.com, markjkohler, K-O-H-L-E-R.com, and you can get to the law and accounting firm from there as well. Well, just so fun to be here with you. It's always exciting to be talking about these little tips and strategies. I have to be honest, I oftentimes learn, sometimes I think more than our listeners do. I'm selfish that way. I get to pick guests and have experts come on here that are smarter than I am. So with that said, we've got one of our regular guests, one of our experts here and newest partners at the accounting firm of Kohler & Ayer CPAs. We've got Dustin Johnson, a powerhouse, and I know a resource to many of you around the country. Then welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Hey, you sound a little distant, too. I don't know if you're on speaker or if you're in a kind of a wind tunnel, and, you know, just throwing that out.
No, so, you're good. I was multitasking a little bit, and I picked it up now, so we're good.
Thank you. I can imagine with, again, tax season upon us here, this is lucky you actually can even get on the show here with us. But what do you got for us? A little tip or strategy for us?
Well, we've ran into it a few times this week, so I wanted to bring it up. But it deals with selling your primary residence and the exclusion that you can get for a primary residence. I think most of us know that that's the case. You can do that. But two situations that came up this week and something to think about in certain situations is, first of all, we had a couple that got married, and they both had their own homes before, and they wanted to sell them and move into a joint place. And they both sold their homes at the same time after they were married, and it kind of defeated half of the purpose of using that exclusion. Because what?
Wow. That's kind of. I just want to interject. I haven't thought of that situation before, where a married couple comes to a new couple gets married. Both have a home. They sell it and sell both homes to buy a new one. I didn't think there could be a problem there, but you're right. The timing could be odd. Keep going. This is interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a timing thing, because when you're married, you can only sell a home every 2 years to qualify for this exception. And if you do it in between then, you're basically out of luck on one of the homes. So that's the first and main concern there. If you are in this situation, get some tax advice on how best to get rid of the properties. Obviously, in this situation, we're going to look and see which one had the largest gain and take advantage of the exclusion on the largest gain. But there are ways that we can work around this, whether you sell the properties earlier, before the marriage, while you're still single, or hold on to one. You know, we always talk about rental properties. Hold on to one for a few years and then turn around and sell that. So that's the first scenario. The second scenario.
I've got to interject here, Dustin. So, boy, that's a hard one. So there's no way kind of after the fact to kind of salvage that except deal with it. So I've been – this is sad. So a lot of these couples that are going to their religious leaders, getting some marriage counseling before they get married and they're planning the wedding, they should stop by the wedding planner and then by the CPA's office to do some tax strategizing, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Well, we could definitely foot that wedding bill by saving them some money there. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. I mean, just think of the tax savings that would have occurred with a little preemptive planning while they were getting married. I want to say this too. I've had a lot of couples, I'm sure Dustin, you and I have talked about it many times, that they get married and they wonder if they should file married filing joint or married filing separate. And it used to be pretty clear that filing joint was always the better way to go. But in a new fiancé relationship, too, again, it can get you can have a lot of different variables. So,
absolutely, yeah, that's something that we look at a lot more now. Like you said, it used to be a little more cut and dry, but there's so many different factors that play into it that we like to do that analysis, depending on the states, depending on the exact personal situation. It can vary from client to client.
Very good. Okay, so you said you had a second example of the same tax problem.
Okay, the second one is we had a client who needed to move for their business. In his situation, it was his own business, but he moved to a different state to save some money in taxes and just continue to build his business. And he hadn't lived
Let me assume if he was trying to move money moving out of the state, he was probably moving out of California. So I'm just going to throw that out.
You're absolutely correct. I wasn't going to throw that in there, but since you brought it up, yes. He was not enjoying paying the S-corporation taxes plus his personal taxes. They got a little too much, so he decided to leave the state.
Oh, man.
So you called him, yep.
All right, that's sun tax. Now, many of you give us a hard time here in California this time of year. Oh, you've got it so good. Well, you're paying for it, so
even though there's a guy out here mowing my lawn this morning, and it's going to be 80 degrees, and it's beautiful. There's a bill they leave on the doorstep. So So this guy's leaving California, trying to save some money. He's selling his home, it sounds like.
Well, he'd bought the home the year before. He hadn't even been in the house for 2 years. He lived in it for 7-8 months personally, and then rented it out for a few months. And as you know, California's just had quite a bit of appreciation the last little while. So he was able to turn around and sell it for a good chunk. And he was worried about the tax bill, and we wanted to get an extension payment in. And so when we were looking at it, in understanding the situation a little more, found out that it had been a primary residence for a little while. And I think everybody knows, here's the point I'm getting to, I guess, is everybody knows that there's the two out of 5 year rule. That's if you do that, you can exclude the full amount. The
$250,000 or $500,000.
Yeah, $250,000 or $500,000. Okay. And he's single. But there is an exclusion to this too, that even if you don't live in the house for the 2 out of 5 years, if you have a qualifying reason, be it for work, whether it's a W-2 job and your company moves you, or you find a better job somewhere else, or you're self-employed and you decide to up and move your company to a new location for, your business reasons, you can still get a partial exclusion on the sale of the property. So we did a little digging and found out that that was the case here, and we were able to save him quite a bit of money. We excluded almost $100,000 of the gain that he recognized. Now, again, it's not a full exclusion, but you can get a partial exclusion, even if it's not the full 2 years. That's, I guess, the point I'm trying to get to. So don't lose all hope if you're going to move, and don't stay trapped in your house if a better opportunity comes along and you're like, I just don't want to take the tax hit.
Yeah, these exclusions are kind of interesting, too. I believe on the list, as I've researched this, gosh, it was years ago, is that if you had multiple births, so if you had triplets and had to move out of your house, but you hadn't lived there a whole 2 years, you could take a good chunk of the exclusion, too, and apportion it. There was military issues, moving jobs. It's kind of interesting. So,
A lot of just unforeseen stuff.
Yeah.
Like the triplets and the outgrowing your house a lot faster than you anticipated.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Dustin, thank you. I think this is a great reminder for all of us out there. I think since 1997, when this law changed, that you had the sale home exclusion thing that was more simplified and more generous, that everybody kind of just goes into deadhead mode. As soon as they sell their home and they think they're not going to pay tax because it is so generous. But if you haven't lived there the whole 2 years, or you just got married, you got multiple homes, this is a great reminder that we need to talk about this more and bring it up with our clients, too. So great tip, Dustin. This is another little golden nugget some listener hopefully has taken and put away. Just save it for a rainy day.
Oh, perfect, hopefully. That's the plan. Hopefully we can help somebody out there. So.
Well, awesome. Well, Dustin, thank you. Dustin Johnson, folks at K&E CPAs. You can reach him by calling our main number, of course, and he's one of our partners now reviewing hundreds of tax returns and meeting with clients on high-end strategies. You know how to reach us. If you're listening to the show, you're getting our newsletter, and you know how to find us, so I won't go into the details there. But, Dustin, thanks so much. Appreciate that. Okay, well, we've got another regular contributor to the show, an expert, Lee Chen, who runs our law office in Southern California, an attorney that has just as much time in the courtroom as in the boardroom. A fantastic litigator as well as a corporate attorney helping many of our clients with their tax and legal planning and also fight a few battles. Lee, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mark. Great to be back on.
Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice. So, Lee, thanks so much for finding a few minutes to join us. And I'm excited to hear, folks, this is not scripted. I have no idea what Lee's going to bring up. He could talk about his March Madness bracket. I don't know if it would be helpful or not. I think he's losing in the office pool. But, Lee, the floor is yours. What do you got for us? Any new and interesting tips?
Oh, boy, the pressure, huh? I like to bring up things that come up, in the office. You know, if it comes up frequently, then usually it's an issue that is worth discussing. And I want to talk about disclosure obligations with real estate sales. A lot of people, that come to our office, they may be doing, not your traditional sale. They may be selling to family or to tenants, lease options or something like that, and they want us to help them with their contract. And then I say, okay, you're not going to have agents probably, so how are you going to handle the disclosure obligations? And they say, disclosure obligations? I say, yeah, disclosure obligations. Even though it may not be a traditional sale with brokers or even an escrow or something like that, in most states, it's still a sale, whether it's a seller finance deal or whatever. You still got to comply with these disclosure obligations.
Well, that's a great point, because I think if me and many of you out there, folks, you've bought a home and the realtor shows up with all these pre-printed documents, and you just check the box, yeah, there's no asbestos that I know of and none of this that I know of, and they kind of have everything for you ready to go. And those laws seem to be a moving target, too. There's always some new form I've never heard of. Of course, we can go back to the California thing. But
yes.
But
we won't.
In a private transaction, in a private transaction, you do bring up a great point that people may not realize what paperwork needs to be in the agreement. What do you do in this situation? I'm glad you brought this up.
Well, the issue that comes into our office all the time is, When we get lawsuits or we get people who were in a real estate contract and come to our office and says, this deal is falling apart, I would say 90% of it has to do with a disclosure issue. And some people think, well, if I put as is in the contract, then, maybe I don't need to disclose. Or if it's to a friendly buyer, a family member, a tenant, or if I've never lived on the property, then I don't need to do disclosures. And, that is just CYA. And the reason why when you have a broker, they flood you with these documents to disclose this, that, and the others, because they are covering their butt and they are trying to help you to cover your butt. And that's really the important part of disclosures, because a lot of times people say, well, you didn't tell me this and you didn't tell me that. And how are you supposed to know everything about the property? And so what I tell people is if you don't know something about the property, I mean, you obviously, especially if you are an investor, you're rehabbing it, you've never lived in the property, it's out of state, you may not know everything about the property. Well, if you don't know something about the property, say that you don't know. Okay, for example, you never lived on the property, you might want a disclaimer that says, for example, seller has no knowledge about X and is making no representation about X, and buyer is encouraged to consult the appropriate experts or review the appropriate records regarding X. That way you've disclosed, you don't know, you need to go talk with somebody else, you need to consult the experts, I'm off the hook.
I love it. Now, we're going to have Jay Massey on here shortly. Jay Lee, and he's, of course, a wholesaling expert as well. That's one of the thoughts that comes up to me. What happens if you're in one of these transactions where you're a quote-unquote part of the transaction, not really a owner of the rehabber, but you might be wholesaling a property? What do you do with these disclosures in a situation like that?
Boy, that's a curveball right there.
I'm sorry. I know folks around the water cooler know that Lee's going to take a swing at me for throwing that one at him.
Yeah, when we're dealing with real estate investors, wholesalers selling to the investor or the rehabber or whatever, it's not so much a personal transaction more. It's more of a business transaction, okay? Less of a consumer transaction, more of a business. But I always put in my wholesale agreements that the investor or whoever knows that this person is just wholesaling it. He may have never even been in the property. This is what he's done. This is what he hasn't done. And wholesaler, rehabber, you're taking all the liability with respect to the condition of the property and all these disclosure issues, because this wholesaler doesn't know anything.
Gotcha, gotcha. And I know we're throwing a lot of terms back and forth here, but the important thing is in these agreements to get these types of provisions. And I want to add one more thought from my perspective on this. It's interesting. You bring up these contracts and these private transactions. I had a consult with a client yesterday where it's an LLC transaction, and they're bringing on a new owner, a new partner. And it was really complicated. There's money's already changed hands, which I tell anybody on the show, remember, never give money or take money till the paperwork's done. But all this money has transpired. There's more money promised. There's been nothing in writing. It's just kind of a nightmare. And this guy on the phone, Lee, was like, well, I can just do the agreement myself, can't I? What should I put in it, Mark? And I was like, are you kidding me? I don't even put on a new faucet head on my kitchen sink without calling a plumber. And you've got this complex transaction with over a couple hundred thousand dollars at stake, someone that's already given you money, and you want to know how to download a template off LegalZoom for $15 so you can do it yourself. And this disclosure topic,
but tell me
right
what
when
to
you
put
brought
in
it
there.
Yeah, but tell me what to put in there. And guys, I went into the legal profession to help people, and I love transactions, and I love business, and I want to see people make money. But I think sometimes I feel I'm not a lawyer. I'm a facilitator. I'm helping people make deals happen, and that could even be IRS reporting. But I just want to encourage all of you out there listening. You've got to set aside a little bit of a budget. Many know that we're very, very affordable ourselves, and this isn't a sales pitch comment. It's just, again, CYA comment. Yeah, folks, try not to do these agreements on your own, and this disclosure point is a good one, Lee. I don't even know where you'd start, because every state's disclosures are different, are they not?
Well, yes, and that goes to your point. Not every deal is different. And so we get a lot of people who want to say, well, just give me a template, whatever, agreement, and that should protect me. But when you talk to a lawyer, we're going to ask some additional questions. And those additional questions will likely, it usually is the case, will bring up additional issues that we need to consider, that we need to put in that agreement to protect you.
Well,
in other words, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to drafting agreements that protect you.
Yeah, yeah, no. I want you to know too. This poor guy that I talked to yesterday, if he's listening to the show, I'm not. Of course, I would never share a client's name, or we barely even mention what example comes from what state. But I really tried to be respectful, and I'm trying to be respectful for you listeners here too. That I know that. Plumbers take money, and lawyers take money, and it's a cost of doing business, and it's tough, but it's an important part of doing business. You know what's funny too? I was at church this weekend, and there's a plumber in our ward that drives a BMW, and I was like, man, I'm in the wrong business. This guy's killing it.
I agree. I agree. They're hourly. I mean, they deserve it. But their hourly rates are pretty. I mean, they get paid for what they do, for sure.
Yeah, I've got some stories that are a little colorful for the radio here. But I talked to a buddy once back in college that interned, or I should say journeyman, with a plumber because he thought he wanted to be a plumber, and he went out on his first call, and it was just nasty. This total. Sewer backup, flood of a basement of a home, and the guy by noon had quit, and he was sick to his stomach, and he's like, he goes, I've never lost respect for a plumber since, and if they're driving around in a BMW, gosh darn it, they deserve it. that's funny, but again, the point is, again, we can't do it all ourselves. We've got to use professionals when the time's right. So disclosures, great comment, Lee. Any final words?
No, but just to your point, Mark, every state is different, and there's all kinds of disclosures. I mean, if you go look up California real estate disclosures, you're going to find a whole laundry list, like 20, 30 different things that needs to be disclosed. And how is somebody going to know that unless they consult someone who is familiar with that?
Yeah. You're not going to know where to go and what to grab and all that kind of stuff. So really good point. Well, Lee, Thank you. Folks, if you need to talk to Lee Chen, of course that's Lee at KKOF Lawyers, and just call the main number and we'll hook up with Lee and get a consult and talk disclosure. So, Lee, we'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks for
coming. Thank you, Mark. Thanks. Great to be back on.
You betcha. Well, folks, this brings us to our special guest of the show and the time I really look forward to, and that's getting the insights of a person that we don't get to hear from much. And I really have to tell you, I'm selfish about this. I get to choose incredible mountains of men and women that are out there living the dream, trying to, I didn't say always not working at the dream. They're working. But he's out there, such an incredible resource and wealth of knowledge for many of us out in the real estate industry. And he's expanded it with his new book, Cashflow Diary, 10 Steps to Creating Wealth in Any Economy. I'm talking about Jay Massey, the full-time real estate entrepreneur, investor, developer, sales coach, problem solver. He's worked in the financial industry for years. He's got an amazing rags-to-riches story that hopefully he'll share a little bit with us. And his platform is simple. He invests his time searching for investment opportunities, closing deals, and teaching others how to find similar opportunities to close. I love his style. He's a good friend, and we've got many mutual clients, and I'm just grateful to have him here on the show. And, gosh, Jay, welcome. Thanks for coming on today.
I'm so glad to be here, Mark. Thank you.
Well, I know that it's stressful this time of the process when you're trying to get a book out the door. I think you've been working on this for a year or more, as I know. Even in concept, it started probably before that.
Right.
So tell us about your new book. What's it about, and when's it coming out? When can
you get it? Absolutely. And just in case if I pause funny, I'm hearing an echo right now, and I don't know where it's coming from. But
I'm going to maybe – I'm going to ask Lisa in our studio to make sure that we sound okay. Lisa, on the chat line, we've got many of our listeners listening online, as well as many that have called in that are on the road. Lisa, give me a little sound check on the chat line if things sounds good. Sounds good to our listeners, Jay. And if we need to, you may want to dial in from another line while I'm chatting and we're multitasking a little bit. Maybe that'll help because I know how annoying that can be. But anyway, Jay, back to you and your book. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's been a journey, that's for sure. And I've definitely enjoyed the process of putting it all together. That was in quotation marks, by the way. And it came from the fact that so many people, when I would go speaking and go places, they would just ask me to answer some of the same questions. How did you get started? You know, I can't believe you did all that from starting. I mean, many people, maybe you've not heard me, you don't know, but my wife and I, we started in what many would call a disadvantaged situation. She has a condition known as hyperemesis. She could not eat or drink while pregnant, so that caused stress, to say the least. I went and started selling our personal possessions on eBay, hoping to solve the problem, but that didn't obviously work out. And then one day I went to go play volleyball, and then I punctured my lung, and it became an additional issue because now I have pleurisy, so I had a hole in my lung, I couldn't breathe, I couldn't walk and talk simultaneously, and that just started a downward spiral long before people were handing bailout checks, and we had to figure out something to do. And for us, that meant, a friend came to us and said, hey, you should become a real estate investor. I'm like, what part of, I have a credit score of 398 and I can't put $75 together, are you not hearing? And for some reason, he said that, you know, real estate was still the answer. And it didn't seem obvious at first, but as you and me were talking about earlier, yeah, I started out with wholesaling, and that's part of the conversation in the book. It's evolved since then. You know, we've moved over to multifamily buildings. I have a commercial building now. I literally just before talking right now got a notification about my commercial tenant and their schedule on moving in and tenant improvement. And you want to talk about contracts and negotiations. Oh, my God. It's a team of people on that end when you're negotiating with a very large corporate publicly traded entity. It's like crazy. However, these are the things that have happened, and I don't want to be I would be remiss, I guess that's the word I need to say. I would be remiss if, unless I said thank you, to Lee, to Jerome, or Jerem, I always mess his name up, to Matt, all you guys over there, because if you guys hadn't planted the seed that this could be done, I don't know what my wife and I would have done. We would have just, I don't know. I really don't know. But you helped us unlock the possibilities, and now we get the privilege of unlocking those possibilities for many, many other people. And that was the whole point of writing the book, is that the book can get to more people faster than I can. And I've been hearing some really, really great things about the book from many different people across the world already.
Well, and it is truly across the world. I know you've had people in other countries pick up the book and mention it, and we've wanted to get you on the show and talk about it. And you've been putting us off, Mark. It's not ready. But I want to go back for a minute, and I think this really helps some of our listeners for just if you'll humor me for just a minute or two. This tragedy that you went through with your family, your wife's health, and your health, I just think back of the movie Pursuit of Happiness, because I know you were in the financial industry, very successful for a while, for sure, for years. And then life can sometimes come at all of us very fast, and you had to start from nothing again. And what was going through your mind in that process? And maybe there's some listeners out here, too, that are feeling that same way in their lives.
Sure. The I guess the major thing to understand is, and this is what when I go on stage, and I've had the privilege now of speaking to thousands and thousands of people about this, and I look forward to speaking to thousands more, the major thing to say is, it's not the end of your story. Focus on what you want to have happen, not on what is happening or what you are afraid might happen. Those are very, very key, important things, because what you focus on enlarges, it gets bigger, it all of these things. What's key to understand is take it day by day, one step at a time, because you never know. I mean, tomorrow, you don't know what's going to happen. You might not make it to the end of this particular conversation, and hopefully you do, but if not, you probably already got your estate plan together because Mark told you to do that. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to is you had to focus on small baby steps, the redefine success. There were some days where, you know, I was like, cool, I brushed my teeth today. I was successful. You know, you got to break it down and make it that simple for you so that you can play the success game and win. You can stack a whole bunch of negative things against you easily, because our conscious is that we do that. We self-sabotage. It's one of the things that I still have to practice on a daily basis, listening to other people's thoughts, other vlogs, other podcasts, other radio shows, other people's audiobooks, because I want to make sure that my mind stays focused in the correct direction. What's really key, though, is just understanding and believing that you can play any game if you're taught the rules. And the rules that most of us were taught growing up aren't a game that support us anymore, because the rules changed back in 71 and 74. And when that happened, you know, no one sent out a memo. There was no email. No one said, hey, here are the new rules. This is how you play. And we were still operating under old programming and needing to be reprogrammed through other people's ideas and their books and the things that you shared is what makes the difference.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those personal thoughts, because we've been watching from afar. I remember the first time I met you, and gosh, probably 8-9 years ago, and you were starting with nothing. And to see what you've accomplished, I know you say it from stage, so I'm going to say it for you, but folks, Jay's now got well over 200 to 300 rental property doors between multi-units and buildings, and to go from having nothing 7 or 8 years ago to being a real estate mogul and doing it honestly and with integrity is just absolutely phenomenal. So let's get on your book here for a minute. So these 10 steps, I love 5 steps, 7 steps, 10 steps. I'm kind of the check it off the list step guy. So I love, right off the bat, you had me with your title, because I want steps. I want to be able to say, okay, I did this. What do I work on next? So what are some of the important steps here in this book that maybe pick one that really you felt, hey, when I wrote this book, I got to have this step in my book. This is one that a lot of people may have not thought about or put in their book.
Sure. Well, and here's the thing, let me back up and say this. No one listening to me, no one in the sound of my voice, myself, you, no one, quote unquote, starts with nothing. We all have something to contribute, and that was definitely one of the most important chapters. I mean, step number one, where we go through the story. And I've heard so many people being, be able to get the information that they needed to at least get started from beginning, just from the beginning chapters. And we go through a number of the steps that lead up to the ability to learn how to raise private capital and do all these things. There's a technology, if you will, that I've developed called, I call it the Profit Analysis Quadrant. It's been the very main number one tool, and this is the key. This has been, people ask me all the time, Jay, how on earth have you raised millions of dollars across all these states and done this? It's because of combining the wisdom, the collective wisdom of my CFO, of Mark Kohler, and everyone else who's poured into Jay, and to be able to explain how you go out there and structure a deal, you know, who gets what and how to make that happen. These are all necessary steps. But the most important thing to understand is we all start with something. Find that something. Marcus Buckingham wrote a book called Go Put Your Strengths to Work. Find those strengths. And that's a lot of what I end up doing in my, I do these strategy sessions where, you know, when we're first starting, I'm trying to help people get started. And we have to figure out what they're good at, what they're not good at, and let's go work on those things that we're good at and leverage out those other things. So we go through in the book as well, to, you know, building a team. It's really hard, Mark, to limit myself to one of the steps because they all feel so important. They're sequential. They're there for each person to be able to go out there and utilize in a very, very tangible way. And it's like, you know, what's more important, my left arm or my right arm? Well, I kind of like them both, you know?
That's right. I didn't know if you had one in particular that you're like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, a particular step that most people miss out on. What else? And I love what you said. No one starts with nothing. That we can all, we need to identify our strengths right away. And it's true. Some people have personality strengths, intellectual strengths, maybe some resources or contacts, or maybe even where you live could be a strength compared to others where they're not. What's one of these first steps that we need to, I've got your book here. I don't want to put words in your mouth. What step do you want to start with? Maybe if you don't mind, share one of these, let's hyper-focus on one for a minute that you think would maybe be helpful today to get a sense of what these 10 steps are all about.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Would love to. And one of the things that you just said was one of the keys. So let's go back to, you know, focusing on what we do have. That's probably the most important thing. Let's focus on what we do have. What we do have is the ability to focus on whatever we want. We've got this internal power that allows us to be able to do that. We call that will. Now, here's the thing. You said, and I love what you said, maybe where you live is a strength. And that's the thing. There are certain areas, especially when it comes to real estate of the country, that are stronger in other ways than not. And that's so for example, I live in California, the land of that. We call it the Sunshine Tax. I gladly pay it. I love every bit of it. However, most of my beginning wholesale deals were done completely out of state because I was leveraging the fact of the difference in the economies between the two locations. The key to understand is that where there's chaos, there is cash flow. Where there is differentials and inefficiencies, there's opportunity. Many people ask and go, wow, the economy's bad. Well, what we fail to remember is that when we need the economy, for those of us that are new, if the economy only went up, it only went in one direction, and that's all it ever did, the new people never have a shot at, quote-unquote, getting in. We need the economy to break from time to time. When things break, that's your opportunity to refine. And those are the concepts that we talk about in the book to help you be able to identify, you know, opportunities. I've done this on stage before where no matter where I am, I can take a newspaper and begin to find a real estate deal, not by even going, I don't even need to go to the real estate, the classified section. I can just take the articles and point out to people, look, here's a real estate deal, here's a real estate deal, here's another real estate opportunity. Opportunities are in disguise. And that's the key message out of my story. There was opportunity in disguise, and I didn't understand it. And that's one of the things that you've got to learn to understand. Then once you are able to recognize opportunity.
Go ahead and finish. Go ahead.
Okay.
No, go ahead, Jerry. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. When you were talking about identifying, I was going to comment there. But once you identify, go ahead.
Got it. Once you identify opportunities, you or problems or challenges or what have you, then it becomes to customizing the solution to fit the person's needs. That's my secret, if there is a secret. I don't do anything magical. I ask people lots of questions, and in fact, we go through this script in the book. We go through the script, the same script that I've used for years to be able to generate leads, whether that's to buy houses, whether it's to find an investor, whether that's to wholesale property to. It doesn't really matter. Buyers or sellers or money, it doesn't matter. The same questions exist. And we go through that script, and it starts with, have you ever considered getting involved in real estate investing? And people are going to answer that question. And then you find out really why. And then I kid you not, those two questions paired together, used with many different intonations, have been what has led to my understanding of how to service and help people. But it becomes identifying problems. Here's the biggest challenge. I now believe that education, the purpose of education, is to train you and I to recognize opportunity. The challenge is that you and I have been trained to recognize one opportunity the most, and that's usually called the job, which is something many of us are looking to escape from.
Okay. Well, gosh, you threw out so much there. I'm going to try to go back and dissect some of it. Thank you so much. I mean, geez, I for some of you listening that have a pen and paper handy, it just copious info. Thank you so much. So let's go back to that finding the opportunities point you made right at the beginning there. So I'm a firm believer that if you're lucky enough to be right down the street from an incredible deal and you're in that tumultuous economic change where opportunities arise, great. But if not, I was just up in Seattle this weekend talking to investor groups about the power of looking around the United States as our backyard, and there's plenty of opportunities around the country. Back on that theme for just a moment, and we go through, then maybe talk about the action step there, but identifying opportunities in real estate, what do you tell folks? I mean, I guess there's different types of real estate deals. And then I said, is all these 10 steps real estate focused? Are we doing things to build wealth that don't sometimes involve real estate? Sorry for the two-part question there. What are your thoughts?
No problem. First of all, let me be very clear. What I've done pertains to real estate, the book is about business. There's lots of business. Real estate is just the example that's used throughout the book because it's what I have. I have tangible examples of my before and after pictures on many of the properties. I've got tangible examples of how to raise capital. I've got tangible examples of the mistakes I've made. And I put that all in the book to teach you the lessons that are required so that you can function or so that you can grow your own business based on principles. That's what's key. So the principles are there. Now, when it comes to recognizing opportunity, understand, here's what I mean. Real estate is owned by people. So what you learn to do is you don't look for properties. That's what people ask me all the time. Jay, how do I find properties? How do I find properties? I'm like, you're looking for the wrong thing. And they're like, what do you mean? What you're looking for are problems. People have problems. And if that person happens to own real estate, then all you're going to do is you're going to use real estate to solve the problem. The same thing is true if you want to make a movie. You know, people have a problem. The problem is entertainment. We want to be entertained. And if you happen to be someone who uses movies as a form of entertainment, then there you go. The same questions and strategies still work. If you want to, you know, I've been looking for, you know, franchises and all kinds of other things. But when you're – all of those things solve a problem that are had by people. And what you do is you look for the person who has that problem and ask them those questions, and you change it around. So you think people, for example, I get this one all the time, Jay, people with money don't have problems. I'm like, okay, they have different problems than you might be used to, but they still have problems. And sometimes that problem is, how do I deploy the money? How do I do it in such a way that they don't want to invest their time? And you've got to learn to work with, you know, people where they are at instead of looking for your need first, lead with your solution.
Oh, that's a great point, too, because Being a successful investor is being being able to read people and read situations, because I think you made just a classic example is that maybe we use, well, for your example that you brought up at the beginning of the show, where, Mark, I had health issues, my wife had health issues, we didn't have a lot of money, and you were able to recognize, well, other people aren't in that same problem. Their problem may be they're working 80 hours a week and they don't know how to deploy their assets so that they could quit working as much, and they need someone that's on the ground and out there and seeing deals, and you identify a problem for them and you put together a deal. I think that's a great point, that it's not everybody doesn't have the same problems, and your solution could be a way to partner with others. We've got to be able to read people in this process.
Exactly. And that is the crux of understanding that there's a key concept throughout the book called, I got this from a guy down in San Diego, Jim Bunch, he says that wealth is a team sport, but most of us don't know how to even play on the team, and we're trying to play all the positions, and because we're trying to play all the positions, the business doesn't grow. We get frustrated because we're playing out of position. There's only a few positions you're even designed to be playing in the first place. That's why we call it strengths and weaknesses. And what you must begin to learn to grow and do is to align yourself with those individuals who can help fill in those weaknesses so that you can go out there and make that happen. I mean, wholesaling was a great way for us to get started. It's something I still do. We still provide turnkey properties to individuals, and it makes it very, very simple for them to build their portfolio. And because I was listening to you, I solved the problem. The problem that most people have with getting property is that they can't get financing. So what if I change that and give them non-recourse financing? Boom. See, that solved the problem. And then the problem becomes, what about property management? How do you build the team? Well, what if I did that for you? Well, what about the tenant? Well, what if I did that for you? What about the insurance? Well, what if I helped you with all of those things that you know, that I know you're going to have to deal with? That's the one thing that I want to say to most wholesalers is that you're selling a piece of meat when they're asking for the full Happy Meal. And all you do is give them the house, but what you really need to give them is the full package, and you would be way more successful at giving them the full package. And that's what my team does. We send people on the ground to go and inspect and do all the things so that people have a shot at being able to stay at home or wherever they like to live and build a real estate portfolio long distance using our system with management and everything in place.
Well, I love that analysis of trying to, again, be a problem solver and trying to invest. And find those solutions in that manner. Choose one of the 10 steps. Which is a step that you think might, I know they're all, of course, interrelated. Are they progressive? Like you do one, and then you do two, you do three, or are they can they be tackled all at the same time? What do you recommend?
Well, you can only go through so many learning curves at once. So that's part of the challenge. You can only go through, you can't do them all simultaneously, even though our desire is to do them simultaneously, because if you're like me, you want to get good at everything all at once, all at the same time. So, okay. Well, we've been kind of talking about it, but if you think about it, like, when you're talking about, let's call it step, let me think, eight. Well, okay. No, five. Training your brain, your mindset matters, okay? Because the mindset that you approach a problem with is not going to be the same mindset that you actually solve that problem with. You may try to do that, but that's not going to work. So we'll take my example, right? My mindset had to change in order to solve the problems that we were explaining or that we were feeling. So when we go through this, we have to understand that our thoughts are real things, that what we're doing out there in the workplace actually makes a difference. So, for example, because you had the thought today, hey, I bet I need to get on the Mark Kohler show because I'll probably learn something. Okay, good. You had that thought. That thought repeated long enough becomes a feeling. That feeling repeated long enough becomes a belief. That belief eventually becomes an action. So now, those of you who are already listening, you take the action of listening to the show over and over and over again because you believe you're going to get what it is that you need to take the next step, and you're right. After you keep taking those actions repeatedly, you end up with a habit. And that habit begins to form a character, that character a destiny. So when you are thinking about your brain, the good thing is that you get to control it because it all starts with what you think. And it's called the you know, process of manifestation, if you will. And here's the thing. Inside Chapter 5, I break down that process of manifestation. You see the actual tool that I use. I call it a vision book, to be able to make that happen. So you go step by step, and you say, okay, and again, here's the thing. With this, it doesn't matter where you're starting. What matters is where do you want to go. I don't care who you are, where you're from, what you did. What does matter is what you want to do now. And with and that's what we talk about, is getting our mind in the right direction so that our actions can follow, our feelings can follow, so that our habits and character now form to be able to do those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing here, just sitting and listening to you, is how so many, it's just a wonderment of creation, how all of us on this earth have different ways we think about things and approach things. Me as an accountant, you know, I tend to be in a lawyer, you know, a little more analytic, and I love that the way you're expressing these concepts of going through and personal development. I always sit in the back of the room or read a book like yours, and it's just, it speaks to me because I can't, you can sense here, I can't even articulate some of those steps that a person goes through to go from a thought to a belief to an action and making their life change. I talk about it in my vernacular and with my vocabulary in different ways, but it's fascinating the way you're talking about this, and I know it speaks to a lot of people, that personal development. So many of us are starving for something to help us get to that next level.
Right.
What's been some of the feedback of people that have read the book and said, you know, Jay, this part really helped me to get out of my rut and create that habit. I know that many people will read it and take different things out of it. Yeah.
Right. The main part that I've been hearing the most about so far, I mean, there's been the part of, I think it's, I want to say it's chapter 9. I just want to make sure I get it right because I know some people are going to end up with the book. And I'm like, what section was that? Because it's all important to me. Yeah. When you're thinking about the profit analysis quadrant, that's the step. It's getting towards the end of the book where we're talking about step 7. It's page 217 in the book if whenever you get there. But what it comes down to is you've got to consider the whole package. It's something I call the profit analysis quadrant that allows people to go out there and break down deals. It's what we were talking about earlier. And as you go through that process, I've had individuals of various kinds say that they've just never seen how to be able to structure deals in this particular way, and that has helped them. In fact, Matt Sorensen has seen it so many times because that's exactly what we do. That's how I literally do my deals. I don't have a way to do them any other way, and that's where it came from. But I've got people emailing saying that, you know what, I finally found the courage to actually go out there, and that's the thing that's good. Is that many times people think the technical knowledge of real estate is what's required, but what's more important than the technical knowledge is that you become the person that is capable of handling those responsibilities. And as you do that, it helps you to move through the process of becoming a bigger, better, badder investor. And then more importantly, you can begin to affect change. And I don't know how else to say it. And the major reason, and let me be very clear, the major reason that we're talking about real estate is because, you know, the tax laws and the codes and everything else, the benefits of real estate is what most of us want. And if I had to be honest, if spoons provided the same benefit, then we would be talking about spoons right now.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I hear you. Tell us about some of your other venues for getting your message out. I know that you're speaking quite a bit, and you've got a podcast. If people are are relating to you and feeling your message and want more, where, how do they get your book as well? Where do people go?
Okay. Well, there are two major ways to do this. For those of you that are listening and possibly international, you can go to cashflowdiary.com/book. But for those of you who might not be near a computer right now, here's what you do. You're going to send a text message. You're going to send the word book in a text message, B-O-O-K, to 949-682-3565. 949-682-3565. And the word is book, B-O-O-K, in a text message. What's going to happen is that I'm going to just email you some sample chapters and get you started on that process. Additionally, what we're doing is, because and I found it interesting that you and Lee were talking about wholesaling, because that's what I'm doing, is I'm going to be teaching some individuals, those of who send in and purchase the book, you'll be able to get invited to a webinar where I teach you how to wholesale, how I've done easily my first 100 or 200 transactions were all done this way, using none of my own money or credit and making that happen. And additionally, if that wasn't enough, later, typically on Tuesday afternoons, 4 p.m. Pacific time, you can find me live at cashflowdiary.tv. You can send in questions. So later today, today being Tuesday, I'll be there at cashflowdiary.tv, and you can just log on and watch, and you can send in questions, and I do my best to review your deals and answer and tell you how to structure them and make all that happen. And if you're one of those individuals who says, you know what, I'm done learning, I'm just ready to start earning, that's why we started BeginInvestingNow.com, to help people be able to take advantage of easy cash flowing property that they can go ahead and begin to add to their portfolio. Because somebody told me you're supposed to buy one a year. Do you remember who that was?
Well, I love it. You're speaking my language now. Now, and I can speak some language here. I think we all need to find ways to invest each year. And if one rental of property a year is a target that makes sense for you, I it does for me. So I love this. And so in your book, you highlight the wholesale strategy as well, don't you?
Yes.
I think that's, again, many people I've talked to are just fascinated with your skill set when it comes to wholesaling, how with, again, poor credit and no money, you can get make deals happen almost within weeks, if not months. I mean, it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, many people, I don't know where it was, I don't know who told the lie that it has to take forever for you to go through escrow and to buy a property and all these other things. But that's why, again, that's why the programs that I teach, when I show people how to wholesale, they're designed for high volume. Well, if you've got to deal with Fannie and Freddie and credit scores, that's low volume. How can you deal with high volume and being able to get or understand how to find deals? How do you have deal flow? You know, all of those things are very, very key, but this is, again, why I'm doing my best to digitize everything, get the book out there. Send a text message, 949-682-3565. The keyword is book, and get started. I mean, at the end of the day, here's the message that I want to say. Once you get started, you're started already, by the way. You're listening to this show. You have already chosen to start. Stay started. That's what you've got to do. And implement what Mark says to do at the speed of instruction. I'm still implementing because there's just so much, and it changes. But it's exciting at the same time. And you're doing good stuff here, and you're helping. I mean, I just want you to know. I want everyone to know that if it wasn't for individuals like Mark Kohler, there would be no Jay Massey. You got to understand that. So you're listening to the right people, and he's telling you to do the right things. Now it's your job to let fear get out of the way and go get it done.
Wow. Jay, thank you so much for your kind words about me. I appreciate that. And for taking the time to write a book like this. I know it's a huge, huge endeavor. I'm excited to break it down piece by piece. When does it launch? When can we – and we've just got a few seconds left here, but when can people actually – get the book, and where?
Because I'm signing all copies.
The book, sorry.
yeah. They actually can get the digital final copy is actually available now. So they'll actually, if they go to the website, they'll be able to get it. And I'm signing all the copies. So it's going to take a little minute before me to get caught up with all the signatures that I've got to send out. But you'll have it.
I love it. I love it. Jay, thanks so much for joining us. What an awesome hour here at both Jay Massey, author of the book Cashflow Diary, 10 Steps to Creating Wealth in Any Economy, a full-point expert. Jay, we hope to have you back. Thanks so much.
I look forward to it.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next Tuesday, 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.